This is the American Ag Network Week in Review. In the show today, Rusty Halvorsen gets us caught up on the week's top news.
Economists say a fresh government shutdown would take a toll on U.S. economic growth as well as business and consumer sentiment as a deadline to reach a deal over border wall funding approaches next week. Congress and the White House face a February 15th deadline to reach an agreement on spending issues. The president, when he announced the temporary deal to reopen the government, said that if no deal is reached that included wall funds, he would either shut down part of the government a second time or declare a national emergency. USDA is moving forward with implementing the 2018 Farm Bill, even as another government shutdown looms. The agency's work on implementing the legislation could be delayed again if Congress and the president fail to reach agreement. USDA will move as quickly as they can when it comes to implementing the Farm Bill. That, according to USDA Deputy Secretary Steve Sensky, he says sign-up is still going to be several weeks away.
We have charged each of the mission areas within USDA to hold a listening session to invite in, either formally or informally, the various stakeholders that we know that are interested in those provisions so that we can hear from them. And so we do want to hear from those various stakeholders, and we're going to be making some of those announcements coming up. We're going to be putting together a schedule, a calendar of those listening sessions. We'll be sharing that widely so that folks know when those are and can be attending those listening sessions. And again, we really do want to hear from folks as we move forward. And we're going to have to be holding those quickly because we're going to have to move quickly as well on the implementation.
Two priorities for action include the new dairy program, updating provisions in the ag risk coverage and price loss coverage programs, and trade promotion efforts.
There's a lot of other provisions, though, where the Congress has authorized us to take certain actions, but there it comes with policy decisions that have to be made on how to implement that. We'll be, along with the appropriate mission area undersecretary and the Office of General Counsel and the Office of Chief Economist, Office of Program Analysis, we'll be taking a look and getting the recommendations and be making those decisions, or in some cases for the bigger ones, we'll be taking those recommendations up to Secretary Perdue for him to be making sure that we're implementing it in line with his thinking as well.
Secretary Sonny says he's going to sound out Congress before moving ahead with the relocation of the Economic Research Service and the National Institute for Food and Agriculture. Perdue telling reporters this week he'd have a revised list of the potential relocation sites very soon. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said this past week that there are no plans yet for President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping to meet to finalize a trade deal. Trump has said no agreement will be final until he meets with his Chinese counterpart. The president speaking on that topic during the State of the Union address.
I have great respect for President Xi, and we are now working on a new trade deal with China. But it must include real structural change to end unfair trade practices, reduce our chronic trade deficit, and protect American jobs.
Mnuchin and Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer are leading a team to Beijing next week to continue negotiations. Mnuchin said on Wednesday there's nothing planned at this time for the presidents to meet. President Trump also spoke about trade with Canada and Mexico during the State of the Union.
I hope you can pass the USMCA into law so that we can bring back our manufacturing jobs in even greater numbers, expand American agriculture, protect intellectual property, and ensure that more cars are proudly stamped with our four beautiful words. Made in the USA.
And the president had a request for Congress.
Tonight, I am also asking you to pass the United States Reciprocal Trade Act so that if another country places an unfair tariff on an American product, we can charge them the exact same tariff on the exact same product that they sell to us.
On other topics, the president talking about the White House accomplishments of the past year. That includes a cutback in regulations, too.
My administration has cut more regulations in a short period of time than any other administration during its entire tenure.
And, of course, there's the Farm Bill.
In the last Congress, both parties came together to pass unprecedented legislation to confront the opioid crisis, a sweeping new Farm Bill, historic VA reforms.
Following the State of the Union speech on Tuesday night, it appeared that Congress and the president are on the same page when it comes to improving the nation's infrastructure, but are they up to the task?
Both parties should be able to unite for a great rebuilding of America's crumbling infrastructure.
We visited with Mike Steenhook with the Soy Transportation Coalition.
Well, we're certainly hopeful, and you know, one of the things that really is discouraging to me and to others, and this is an indictment on both Republicans and Democrats, is that these issues that are really causing division have much less to do with policy differences and have much more to do with personality differences. Just this unwillingness to yield on one point, because what that would mean is the other side would actually be able to notch a win. And that's really concerning when we get to that point, when things are allowed to calcify to that kind of point. Some of these issues, as divisive as they may be, there are opportunities that you can see for collaboration and to actually get something done. And infrastructure is one of those opportunities. So while Congress and the administration, they kind of remain at this kind of point of dysfunction, it certainly should impress upon farmers and other constituents to remind ourselves that we're actually the voters, we're the bosses, and it's entirely our right to actually go to our elected officials and say, these are the things that are really important to our industry. These are the things that we really need, and we urge you to be attentive to them and actually do something about it. We want the to-do list of the American people to start getting checked off. And there's a big item on our to-do list, and that's called infrastructure. And we would like to see a check mark next to that. And so it's entirely appropriate for us to make that case. That's something we need to do during the course of this year.
Meanwhile, USDA reported this past week new Chinese soybean purchases.
These increased sales are very welcome. We would like to see a whole lot more of it. We're still at about just shy of 10 million metric tons of soybeans being sold this year, and that's including the recent increase in sales from the recent meeting. We typically sell between 30 and 35 million metric tons of soybeans a year to China. So that is a substantial difference from what we normally do. This is coming on the time of where the South American harvest is getting ready to come online with greater intensity. And so all of a sudden, we'll have a lot more competition from our friends in Brazil and Argentina. So our ability to really be the only supplier, that will diminish. So we're very hopeful that something can get resolved. We would really like to see a breakthrough. We would have liked to have seen that occur yesterday. But we just need to keep impressing that this is a market that we've really cultivated and developed for many, many years. The American Soybean Association opened an office in Beijing in 1982. And so this is something we got to where we were by a lot of hard work by farmers. And we don't want to see that market evaporate. We would like to see it get resumed. And farmers throughout the United States, particularly in some of the western corn and soybean belt states like the North and South Dakota and Nebraska, they really stand to benefit from that. So that's something that's a high priority for our industry.
The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee voted 11-10 along party lines this past week to confirm Andrew Wheeler, acting administrator at the EPA, as permanent head of the agency. The vote highlighted a growing concern among Democrats about climate change and proposed changes to EPA regulations. Ranking member Tom Carper of Delaware asked to delay Wheeler's nomination due to a number of issues that concern Democrats. He had blunt words for Wheeler at a hearing during last month's government shutdown.
The day after Mr. Wheeler was named EPA Acting Administrator last summer, I sent him a letter. And in that letter, I reminded Mr. Wheeler of the challenge and the opportunity he was granted to chart a new course for the agency after the scandal-plagued tenure of Scott Pruitt. Mr. Wheeler is certainly not the ethically bereft embarrassment that Scott Pruitt proved to be. And to be fair, he is engaged more frequently and substantively than Scott Pruitt with both Congress and the EPA career staff. I knew that Mr. Wheeler and I would not agree on every issue. We don't. But I hoped that he would moderate some of Scott Pruitt's most environmentally destructive policies, specifically where the industry and the environmental community are in agreement. Regrettably, my hopes have not been realized. In fact, upon examination, Mr. Wheeler's environmental policies appear to be almost as extreme as his predecessors, despite the promise that Mr. Wheeler made when he first appeared before our committee.
Tax writers are under pressure to renew temporary tax breaks. Many expired after 2017, including breaks for biofuels. Kurt Gavoric is with the National Biodiesel Board.
The trade associations represent essentially, you know, much of the supply chain from the feedstock providers, whether that be the soybean growers or the renderers through animal fats, to the biodiesel producers, and then our downstream marketing friends with the truck stops, the petroleum marketers, convenience stores, etc. So it shows a strong unanimous support within the entire feedstock to producer to supply chain industry support for biodiesel and the biodiesel tax credit.
Gavoric says there's strong bipartisan support for extending the biodiesel tax credit in both the Senate and the House.
We've simply needed both the vehicle and the willingness of the leadership of the two bodies to engage in doing tax extenders on that vehicle. So we pursued it in the fall. There was a proposal introduced in the House last fall that it would have been a 7-year extension of the tax credit, which was ideal in our view, provide that long-term certainty for everybody in this marketplace to develop new feedstocks, to expand production, and to put the infrastructure in place to blend the fuel.
California rancher Kevin Kester wrapped up his year as president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association with last week's cattle industry convention in New Orleans. He says three things stand out in his mind about the past year.
Top of mind across the country as I traveled around are trade issues. Obviously, everybody's wanting to talk about what's going on with a whole bunch of different trade issues, from our new agreement, the old NAFTA agreement with Canada and Mexico with the new one. South Korea we wrapped up. We got Japan and the European Union, United Kingdom, and so on, and China tariffs. But then two things that producers, grassroots folks wanted to talk about was transportation issues with the ELDs and hours of service for livestock haulers. People wanted to get updated on that to see what we were doing on that. And then the other big thing was fake meat. Mm-hmm. So producers across the country wanted to get updated on where the government and where industry was going on that. So those three topics kept us talking a lot.
But there's still more work to be done.
I'm optimistic on transportation issues. We'll come out with a common sense solution for livestock haulers that'll give us the least impact, safe impact. And then for the fake meat, those products from a laboratory won't be coming on the market for several years at the very least, but we want to make sure we're properly set up between the USDA and the FDA where we're not going to be unfairly targeted and false claims made.
Kester is handing over the reins as NCBA president to Jennifer Houston, a native of Tennessee, but Kevin will still be involved in 2019.
We're nimble. We have a great staff in Washington, D.C., and so we have the things that we already mentioned here, but we'll continue to work on trade. The president is very engaged, as you know. We'll have at least four big trade issues, five actually coming up, and so I'll still be involved. I'm on a Ag Policy Advisory Committee with the President for Ambassador Lighthizer and Secretary Perdue. So, but Jennifer and the rest of the NCBA officer team, which I'll still be a part of for another year, we have a great officer team, a strong officer team. NCBA has a great staff, especially in Washington, D.C. representation, so we're in good hands.
That's California rancher Kevin Kester.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.